Good seeing you. As Representative Fabian is making his way to the testifying table, I will bring before the committee House File 4211 to be re-referred to the General Register. Representative Fabian, good morning, sir, and welcome to the Government Operations Committee. And your bill is before us, and we'll give you a chance to share your bill with the committee. Proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 4211 is a bill in this committee simply because when it came to the Environment Committee as a different number bill, we laid it over, and because of some other stuff in the rulemaking in here, we needed to get it in front of your committee, so we had a clone. And the part I think that needs to be talked about in this committee is just lines 1.16 and 1.7, but in essence what the bill is about is I've had the Friends of the Hayes Lake State Park and the Roseau County Commissioners come to me and ask, why can't we have ATVs coming into our parks? We have an extensive trail network in the Beltran Island State Forest, and they would like to be able to just drive into the park with the regular park sticker, your entries and so forth, and pay the fees. They have to stay on any of the designated roads. You can't go riding off and up into the woods and stuff like that. And they just want to be able to get into the park and get out of the park. So they've asked if we couldn't do that. So that's what this bill is about. And then what we're doing here that's probably of concern with your committee, Mr. Chair, is just the rulemaking precision, the provisions that are in Chapter 14, and we're just not subjecting this to those rulemaking provisions. And staff could probably talk about that a little bit. But.
Thank you, Representative Fabian. Before we get to that, did you have a testifier that would like to testify on the bill before the committee, House File 4211? Good morning, sir, and welcome. Let's state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee. My name is George Radke. I am the president of the Alternative Vehicle Association of Minnesota, and I'm here today to speak in favor of this bill. We actually, as ATVers, are constantly, as an FM in general, we are always asked over and over again, where can we ride, where can we camp? And we see that we have two park areas as it stands right now, both in Vermilion and Hayes, that have absolutely fabulous facilities, and they're on-trail systems and accessible from recreation. So what we're looking for is to be able to use these facilities. We do not want to ride in the parks. We are not looking to be in the park to do anything more than to use the facilities just as anybody else who would recreate in the parks. Our goal is to be able to have some place to camp and to be able to ride in and out of the park areas to access the riding areas that are nearby these park areas. So as it would be said, as it was brought up by Mr. Fabian, we're not looking to actually ride in the park in general. We're not looking for that opportunity, just to use the facilities, to be able to camp, to be able to use the bathrooms, and very much willing to pay our share to be able to use these facilities as well.
Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, and I would point out too that once I started kicking this idea around with some other members, then I was approached by Representative Rob Eklund, I believe it was, about the Lake Vermilion Sudan Underground Mine State Park. So we've included that in here, the south half of that, which was originally supposed to have some trails connected into it. And then the other part about that's very important is this is a pilot project that right now sunsets in January 1st of 2024. And I have letters in your packets, I think, from the Friends of the Park, Hayes Lake State Park, and the Roseau County Commissioners.
Representative Fabian, I was going to reference those, and you are exactly right. Those are in members' folders, so members, please take a look at that as you're considering this matter as well. With that, there was one testifier that had signed up in advance. Steve Cook, if he is here, will certainly be willing to take his testimony. Sir, come on down if you would. And if there's anyone else that would like to testify on the matter before the committee, please make your way down as well, House File 4211, and we'll get you queued up and being able to testify. Sir, good morning and welcome to the committee. So state your name and who you represent and then proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Steve Cook and I live in Hutchinson. I'm also a volunteer board member of the Parks and Trails Council of Minnesota and the chair of their legislative committee. Parks and Trails Council is a grassroots organization with over 4,000 members from across the state. I'm here today to speak in opposition to this bill because our members are deeply concerned about the changes and what it would mean. First, the bill runs counter to park user surveys that the DNR has done over the last 10 years that have consistently shown that the majority of park users do not want ATVs in the state parks. Only about 12% actually support the idea in those surveys. Additionally, the public has made their preferences known through recent master planning opportunities, including ones with the Lake Vermilion Sudan Park. And in those cases, the majority of people have expressed the desire not to have ATVs in the state parks. We also have safety concerns. State park campgrounds are some of the busiest places within state parks. You have families camping with young children. Noise is already an issue, common complaint. So the thought of adding more noise and having ATVs in the same campground where children might be playing in the roads and also maybe riding bicycles or, you know, what kids do, you know, can be a concern. The change also potentially has safety issues for ATV users themselves and potential liability issues for the state because of that. Passage of the bill also will degrade the environment of our state parks by increasing noise, damaging plants, land, and increasing erosion. We've heard that they just want to use the roads themselves, but there's also provision in there where designating routes to existing ATV trails are included, and that's a requirement in that. Since the commissioner really doesn't have any jurisdiction outside the state parks, those routes will likely be some new trails or reuse of existing trails, which would displace current users themselves. Just want to make it clear that we're not against ATVs and people that use them. Our opposition is about ensuring that the outdoor activities are compatible with the area where the activity is taking place. State parks have been set aside to be unique, special, quiet places. Minnesota already has 4 million acres of state forest that's open for ATV use. That's 18 times more land than our state park system has. And what's more, 6 times more people use state parks than own ATVs. So if we need more space for ATVs, let's not make it at the expense of our state parks. I've heard that it's a pilot project, but all of our state parks deserve the same protections. Opening the door to ATVs in state parks would be an unprecedented step, one which ignores the opinions of state park visitors, creates significant safety conflicts, increases noise, and will cause environmental damage to our parks. We believe that most ATV users are very responsible and will stay on designated trails, but there's a lot that don't, and that just creates more damage and problems in its own right.
Mr. Cook, I apologize for the interruption. You're giving a lot of background information that's outside of the purview of this committee. Our jurisdiction in the government operations is on the rulemaking. Many of the things that you're bringing forward would be conversations during the rulemaking process that you want to have with the commissioner of the DNR. I'll give you some latitude here today because
I appreciate
of that.
So. And so with that, though, I think the request is to make this an exception to the rules process, and just because of all these issues that I've spoken to, from the safety, the customer preferences to the environmental aspects, we really feel that this should not be exempt from the rules process for that very reason. There's a short timeline in here. People need time to look at things, see what works, how it really fits, and it should be a part of the rules process and instead of being exempted with that. So, thank you.
Mr. Cook, thank you for being here with us today. Representative Nelson, you have a question for the testifier or for the bill author?
Bill author at the end.
Very good.
Listen to the testimony, but yeah.
Okay. Representative Yoakin?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Just
for the,
maybe
for the bill author or for the testifier?
Actually, just a quick clarification. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the jurisdiction of the committee, and I appreciate your comments about Cook. Talking about stuff that would normally be placed under, would talk during rulemaking, but if we're exempting something from rulemaking, then those discussions wouldn't be happening. So I kind of feel like those discussions do belong here.
Representative Yoakim, that's why I gave him some real latitude to be able to share his thoughts on the matter. You bet. You bet.
Mr. Chair, if I,
Mr. Cook.
One last thing. What I was going to say about other users, I think you probably had letters and emails, phone calls from people on this issue, and we know that ATV users, horseback riders, other park users share these same concerns. So just wanted to make note of that, and if you got those, we just hope that you take them seriously.
Mr. Cook, to your point, I've received both for and against, just for the record. You indicated maybe all the members may have only received those who might be of your position on this topic. I received both. So
I'm sure you have.
So, with that, Representative Fabian, any thoughts before I ask if there's anyone else who would like to testify on the matter before the committee?
I can finish at the end, Mike.
Okay.
Yes.
Anybody else would like to testify before the committee? Come on down. We'll get you checked in. Good morning, sir, and welcome to the committee. To identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bob Kamen from Sudan, Minnesota. My wife, Pat, and I have had a home there for 40 years. We're within about a five-minute walk of the Lake Vermilion, Sudan, and the Brown Line State Park. We stayed there the first night it was open, when they opened it last year. And, of course, I'm afraid I have to speak against the bill. And I guess one of the main reasons is because I taught Vanessa to ride a bike at a Minnesota State Park. Vanessa was my wife's grandniece at the time, 6 or 7 years old. She was one of those kids who just had a hard time learning how to ride a bike. And so Pat and I took her and her twin sister to Itasca State Park, and I found a nice piece of blacktop next to our campsite and took off the training wheels and gave her a little push. And she's riding a bike. And her twin sister, not identical twins, a little bit of a Jack Pine savage, and I told Rachel, do not tailgate Vanessa. And of course, Rachel tailgated Vanessa, and Vanessa tipped over, and Rachel ran into her, and I had to untangle a little pile of girls and bicycles. No one was injured, but I think of that sight from many years ago, and it's what makes me dubious about throwing ATVs into a state park. And I say once again, I know Representative Fabian is doing a good job of representing his district, but, you know, with Pat and I, it's our backyard, the state park that belongs to all of us, and I would discourage the encouragement of motorized recreation. And I don't know if it's germane to this bill. I could make another argument about motorized recreation. When I retired, I said, I'm not going to be like those other old men and gain 20 pounds after I retire. And I've been retired for 14 years and I've gained 15 pounds. Now I question if Minnesota needs more motorized recreation. We need to go out there and put one foot in front of the other. So thank you for your toleration of my testimony, and I appreciate the debate here.
Well, sir, you were true to your word. You said you were going to put 20 and you put 15, so you're good. You're good. Thank you for being with us today. Anyone else wishing to testify on the matter before the committee?
Good morning.
Good morning, sir, and welcome. If you'll state your name for the record and who you represent, proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Phil Leversedge. I'm the Deputy Director for the Division of Parks and Trails with the Minnesota DNR. My testimony today, I believe, is germane to the conversation of this group. Division supports or manages state parks, state trails, state recreation areas, and recreation in our state forests under the Outdoor Recreation Act. We believe that this bill is inconsistent with the 86A of the Outdoor Recreation Act in that it's proposing to introduce motorized recreation into state parks. We also believe that it's inconsistent with the process that the Outdoor Recreation Act dictates, and that's a master planning process when there's proposals for major or significant changes in the activities allowed in the Outdoor Recreation Unit. That master planning process is a robust public process that involves public meetings, gives people an opportunity to hear both sides of arguments. So we believe that this bill is inconsistent with that process, and it's also inconsistent with our current rules, and we believe that it's inappropriate to exempt the bill from the rulemaking process. Currently, state park and rec rules prohibit motorized use except for licensed motor vehicles and an exception for snowmobiles on designated trails. That rulemaking process is one that we're undergoing review on right now, and we're looking at revising the rules relative to state recreation areas to allow some motorized use within state recreation areas. But Hayes Lake is a state park, and we don't believe that motorized use, except for licensed motor vehicles, is appropriate in state parks.
Thank you for your testimony this morning. And we'll have you stand by in case there's some member questions as we get into the phase after public testimony. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on the matter before the committee this morning? House file 4211. House file 4211. Seeing none, hearing none. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first off, I want to ask for a roll call on this. And the reason I own an ATV. I'm going to be right up front with that, and I use it in the areas that as mostly use it on my own property for different things. But as I'm looking at this, and the reason I object to this bill is that, you know, not so much the fact of opening the parks to it, but I don't like that idea either. But the fact that we're not subjecting to the rulemaking, and if we're going to allow these certain parks to do this, we need to have rules for where they can go and where they can't go, and it doesn't spell that enough out to me out here in the bill. It doesn't, you know, there was talked about only on roads, only on access roads, but it doesn't say that in the bill. It says they designate the following areas, must designate the following areas, but it doesn't say only on access roads, only on where traffic is. And that's, I mean, this bill has lots of problems that I can see that, you know, even if we were going to allow them into the state park so that the people can stay there and then go to a, drive it to a trail, it doesn't say that here. We're not setting any rules. We don't allow the DNR or the Park Service to set up any rules. So to me, this is a problematic bill. And like I said, that's why I oppose the bill.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Representative Joaquin, followed by Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to first thank Mr. Liversage for doing such a good job maintaining our state parks. Our families growing up with our kids, not me growing up, but my kids, we decided to make a conscious effort to get out and go camping more and enjoy our state parks. And I know a lot of families do. In fact, about a third of Minnesotans use our state parks. They're heavily used. And they're a really affordable way for families to travel. When we first got our pop-up, our little pop-up, and we tented it too, but we had a hard time finding resorts that still had camping to have some of the amenities because resorts are moving to cabins and a lot of other things that are really out of the reach of the average family for renting for a whole entire week. So we use the state parks quite a lot because they are heavy use areas with a lot of amenities for families and for people that can afford them. And I know state forests are different. The campgrounds we've camped in, those two aren't as plush. They don't have a lot of the same amenities as some of the state parks do. So they're not quite as heavily used, so you don't have the really concern about the interaction between families and kids and ATVs and motorized vehicles. As a parent with my kids in the parks, it was always worrisome when they were little about even the roads and the campgrounds. There's signs that are 10 miles an hour that people broke that speed limit all the time, and you really had to be concerned. So adding more motorized traffic to a very heavy-used area with a lot of families is not a great idea, I don't think. I'm not as familiar with the process you go through when you do changes in the state parks. Could maybe Mr. Levesque, I'm saying your name wrong.
Levesque.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Could you please go over a little bit about how you make those decisions, and maybe even why it's a little different to have snowmobiles in a state park versus ATVs? Thanks.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members, the ORA, the Outdoor Recreation Act, defines the process for establishing what's appropriate in any given unit and what the management plan for that unit is. It's a master planning process that develops basically a 10 or 20 year look at what development should occur, what are the appropriate recreational activities that should occur in those units. So when there's a proposed change to that activity, that master planning process is the way that we seek public input. An example of that is last year we proposed closing a golf course at Fort Ridgely State Park. We went through a master planning process in order to make that happen. And that's what we would propose is the appropriate place to have the discussion about a request for putting motorized use into a recreation unit. So if there was going to be a discussion, we would have the discussion around, is motorized use appropriate for that recreation unit? And then our belief is that along with that conversation, if it's appropriate for that recreation unit, we would seek redesignation of that unit from a state park to some other unit, likely a state recreation area. So it's kind of a two-fold process.
Representative, can you follow up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And could you maybe please tell me, too, I know that snowmobiles are allowed in very few state parks, and I can imagine, I can assume why the difference is. I know you don't do a lot of camping in the winter, but maybe you could enlighten me on that.
To the town fire.
Mr. Chair, Representative, you can. Snowmobiles are allowed, of course, on designated trails, and it is primarily because of the lower use season and a limited number of trails or opportunities where they are allowed primarily for access through those units.
Representative Joachim.
One last question, because I didn't get a chance, thank you, Mr. Chair, to look at some of the statistics around state parks. I just know from personal use how much we use them. What is the difference between summer and winter usage?
To the testifier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Newcomb, I'm guessing yes, but I would say that probably 85 or 90% of our use is in the summertime.
Thank you.
Representative Jason Falker, Representative Sandstead.
Thank you very much, Chair. First of all, I guess my opinion is that the state parks are places where people go to commune with nature, or however you want to use that experience. And it's to many people, it's really, really very important to try to keep this as pure as possible. And I'm assuming that's why we have this, and the reason that your bill here is because you're asking for an exemption, and we just truly don't have enough natural space the way it is. I know that people in my area are just very, very conscious of areas to go to use the park. So if we go ahead with this, we are actually changing the way that state parks are used. Is that a correct assumption?
To the testifier.
Mr. Chair, we believe that the most appropriate unit of the outdoor recreation system for motorized recreation are in the state forest. That's where we've developed the extensive trail systems. We've also made a commitment, and we've started opening up forest recreation campgrounds for ingress and egress for motorized recreation. And we also propose, and we're working with ADVAM and other stakeholder groups, that that the state start to make some additional investments to improve the amenities in those state forest campgrounds. We recognize that motorized recreation is a growing sport. It's a growing activity, and that they deserve the same types of amenities. We just feel that there's a better mix of how to provide that.
And secondly, the way I'm looking at the figures, the amounts of actual state parks versus the amounts of areas available for the vehicles is huge. I mean, there's a huge amount of opportunities to use the vehicles already. And so I just really oppose taking any of the state parks and expanding the uses for motorized vehicles.
Thank you, Representative Mason. Representative Sandstedt, followed by Representative Peterson, by Representative Fenton, by Representative Kwan, by Representative Joachim. Representative Sandstedt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Fabian.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
We've got all day, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question is for Mr. Leversedge. Can you give us a time frame of what you're looking at if you were to switch a state park to a state recreational area? Or maybe even specifically in these identified parks?
To the testifier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sandstedt, let me approach it generally, and then I'll talk about the individual parks. Generally, when we undertake a public planning process, a plan amendment, if it's a simple change, not too wide in scope, it will take several months, 6 to 9 months. If it was something where we're doing an overall major management plan for a new unit or completely rethinking a recreation unit, it may take a year and a half or more. The second step of that would be to come back and have specific legislation changing the authorization from a state park unit to something else if it was necessary. So in the case, I'll use the examples. Lake Vermilion State Park has completed the master planning process. During that master planning process, there is a recommendation to allow a motorized campground on a very outside edge. For those of you that know the lay of the park, it's the area south of Highway 169. It was some U.S. Steel land that is south of the main body of the park and connected by forest roads out into the forest. That management plan recommended development of a specific motorized campground there and creation of a secondary unit, a recreation unit, within the park to allow for motorized recreation ingress and egress out of that campground. The second step of that process has not taken place yet, the designation of a secondary unit, a state recreation area unit within the park.
Representative Sandstedt.
If this legislation were not to pass, how do you prioritize those other situations that are already kind of in the works? Or I'm going to ask specifically to the Vermilion piece. Mm-hmm. I want a timeline. When is that going to change?
To the testifier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sandstedt. The department generally introduces our policy changes in the policy years of legislation. We would anticipate that we would bring a bill forward to create the secondary unit at the 8 Vermilion in the next policy session next year.
And to the testifier, does that come through government operations, or does that originate in Representative Fabian's committee, which is outside of the purview of this committee?
Mr. Chair, I believe it goes to your environment.
Rhetorical okay. Nature. I do understand, members, that you do want some latitude, and you know that I am willing to do that. But the question really is, exempt from rulemaking, yes or no, is what's within the committee. And if you could use your time and your questions through the lens of yes or no, that's what I'm looking for.
I'm done.
Representative Sandstedt.
Thank you.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. Do you allow vehicles to come into the park?
Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson, state park rules allow motorized vehicles on designated roads.
Representative Peterson.
And they are, Mr. Chair, if I can add clarification.
Certainly.
Only licensed motor vehicles license for travel on roads are allowed.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so basically this would allow people who are on an ATV get to their campground if they want to camp as well.
To the testifier.
Mr. Chair, it would introduce unlicensed motor vehicles onto the state park roads.
Representative Peterson, follow-up. Representative Fenton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier. So the licensed motor vehicles, but do you also allow the street legal off-road vehicles in the park?
To the testifier.
Mr. Chair, Representative, motorized vehicles that are licensed, including off-road vehicles, are allowed to be operated on designated roads.
So motorcycles, dirt bikes, those type of...
Mr. Chair, Representative, if they're licensed for travel with, you know, registered licenses, yes.
Representative Fenton.
And when these vehicles are in the park, are they recreating boundaries?
To the testifier.
Mr. Chair, can I ask for clarification of the question?
You just asked if when these vehicles are in there, are they recreating boundaries?
Or do they have to stay on the path designated for them?
Mr. Chair, Representative, all motorized vehicles, with the exception of snowmobiles, are limited to travel only on designated roads.
Representative Fenton.
And to the bill author, Representative Fabian, is it your intent that the ATVs would also follow the same rules as a licensed motorized vehicles?
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fenton, yes, and I've worked with the House staff upstairs, way upstairs, to make sure that that is the intention of my bill.
Thank you. No further questions.
Representative Bonham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is reminiscent of when I served with the author on this other committee. Just for clarification, my reading of this is rule making is affected in regards to accessibility, and there's a lot of discussion of licensed registered vehicles. My understanding, and this is for the chief author, is that in rural areas, ATVs have access to the ditches and other routes to go from one place to another place, and that's how they would legally be able to get to the entrance of the park, and that this is just the accessibility on the same designated access routes within the park to a campground. Am I interpreting this correctly?
Representative Fabian, it was directed to you.
Yes, Representative, you've got this nailed. This is exactly what it's about. You can ride the ATVs on the township roads and so forth, the state forest roads in this area. This was brought to me by the Friends of the Park, and all they want to be able to do is buy a day pass or a season pass, take their children and their grandchildren into the park, have a picnic in the picnic area, maybe camp, stop and park in the parking areas and go down to the beach and maybe take their fishing poles along and have a little bit of fun. That's what this is all about. This isn't about going off the trails. This isn't about tearing things up. This is simply what we do in the part of the state that I live in. We ride ATVs. We've got two of the finest ATV manufacturers in the world.
Oh, here comes the pitch.
Here comes the Falls and Roseau, Polaris and Arctic Cat, so, and now Textron. But this is just what we do. And I want to emphasize, members, this is an issue that's brought to me by the Friends of Hayes Lake State Park that works with the DNR and the Parks and Trails Council to do things. So this isn't something I sat around in my office and dreamed up, okay? I've got a lot of other things I could be doing. I'm just supporting my constituents.
Representative Kwan, follow-up. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I share a lot of the same concerns with the vagueness of the bill on lines 1.14 and 1.15. I know it's out of our purview, but when we're talking about accessing these campgrounds from nearby all-terrain vehicle trails, those trails may not be next to a road. They may be accessing through a park in a spot that's not accessible by a vehicle, the way it's drafted. So I think there is enough vagueness in this bill to cause a lot of concern, and I think that's why I've gotten a lot of emails all from all over the state in opposition to this bill, and not very many for it, that's for sure. But now after saying that, I'm sure I will. But no, that I think is the main concern that I'm having been a big user of the state parks. And from what I'm hearing, too, from Mr. Levers, I'm going to say it wrong again, Leversage.
Think of it as two levers and an edge.
Lever's edge. Perfect. I just wrote it wrong. That's why. I was glad to hear that you also acknowledge in your capacity that ATV use is a big deal and that it's growing in our community and it's growing in our state and that folks really want to be able to recreate as well and that you have plans in place to beef up the state forest preserve campgrounds that are already can be accessible by some of the trails. State parks are such a unique creature that we have in the state that are so accessible to a lot of different folks that can't afford to go on huge vacations. I'm leaving on Friday for our spring recess, and I think it's the second time in my entire life where I actually got to go anywhere on spring recess because I just didn't have the capacity monetarily to do that. So our families really use these state parks in the summers to get there because they are accessible and affordable. They're 18 times the amount of trails for folks to use on these. And I know you want to say that folks want to be able to use the parks the way they want to use them and you drive ATVs. You can also get there by a car. So it's not like they're being prohibited from using the parks to go fishing, to take their grandkids places. And maybe as this moves on, because I'm sure it will, I can count just as well as anybody else, that you'll look at tightening up that 1.14 and 1.15. And maybe one more question for Mr. Lever's Edge. Finally got it right.
Do you just want to make sure to pronounce his name before so you had that?
I did. Okay. I have to ask one more question. Plus, I know how much you like questions, Mr.
Edge. Sorry.
Could you tell me, where does the governor stand on this? Have you talked to him about it?
Mr. Lever's Edge.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we know that the governor opposes the bill.
Thank you.
Having no other member questions and seeing no other testimony, Representative Fabian, we will give you the final word this morning, sir.
Well, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the latitude that you've given the committee to ask some questions, and I feel compelled to respond to some of those, but if you want me to stick to the rulemaking...
If you think it helps us to understand whether we should be voting yes or no on rulemaking, we certainly want to hear from you. If it was something that was adjudicated in your committee of jurisdiction, then you can certainly pass on it.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, thank you, and members... I appreciate the concerns that folks have about state parks, okay? I get that. And you talk about how highly visited they are and how pure they are and what natural space they are, Representative Mason. I asked a question in our Environment Committee how many people had been to Hayes Lake State Park, and there was two hands. One was Mr. Larson, and I don't remember, and Phil has been there, okay? Oh, and Bob was there, too, that day. Okay, one of the things that's driving this whole issue is that at Hayes Lake State Park and Lake Brunson State Park and Old Mill State Park, the Department of Natural Resources, in spite of the budgets that have been passed with regards to parks and trails, continues to reduce spending on our small rural parks, and they continue to reduce services. The Hayes Lake State Park has seen a drop in attendance. The Friends of the Park see this as a way to increase attendance, to allow the neighbors and so forth who are around there to come to the park, to have another means of getting there. And yes, you're right, you can drive a car. But quite frankly, the ATVs that I drive, they produce less pollution than a car or a pickup truck. The noise, there are requirements on exhaust systems. Polaris and Arctic Cat / Textron makes vehicles that are very quiet. My Polaris Ranger is very quiet, and so is my Sportsman. And the part about the going off and the plants and the land and the erosion, members, this is to stay on designated vehicle spaces. It's not to venture off of those. I was the chief author. My caucus gasped last year when the governor's recommendation was to bring a $1 per day increase to state park entries or a $5 per year. I said, let's actually do something that's going to help our small rural parks. And I said, no, let's go 2 and 10. And that met with resistance from the Parks and Trails Council, too. Why did I do that? Stuck my neck out politically? Because I wanted to see DNR start making a re-emphasis to our small rural parks. Members, we have a park up there. It's called Old Mill State Park. 2 years ago, the Friends of the Park came to me and said, Dan, our water line is frozen, and we want to replace the water line that broke from up on the hill down to the picnic shelter. DNR won't let us do it. DNR won't let us go out and get volunteers to fix the water line. You'll have to wait until after January 1st or July 1st when a new fiscal year is here so that we can repair the water line in the Old Mill State Park. Members, I'm passionate about our small rural parks and the people that I represent. And this is what I'm doing with this bill. And for those people who are trying to portray this as some sort of a mechanism to get ATVs into Itasca Park and other places like that, it's absolutely wrong. I'm responding to the concerns of my constituents and the constituents of Representative Eklund, who wanted the Sudan Underground Mine State Park included in this language. ATV people are responsible people. They're grandmas and grandpas and moms and dads, just like everybody else. And if you can ride a motorcycle, a dirt bike, and an off-highway vehicle in there, okay, you can bring in big diesel pickups pulling a fifth-wheel camper behind it, you should be able to bring an ATV into a small rural park in rural Minnesota as a pilot project. Thank you.
And with that, Representative Fabian, I will renew the motion on House File 4211, 4211. Be recommended to be re-referred to the General Register. A roll call being requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Aye.
Representative Pugh.
Aye.
Representative Bliss.
Aye.
Representative Fenton.
Aye.
Representative Freiberg. Representative Halverson.
No.
Representative Jessup. Representative Lee.
No.
Representative Mason.
No.
Representative Nash.
Aye.
Representative Nelson.
No.
Representative Peterson.
Aye.
Representative Quam.
Aye.
Representative Sandstead.
Yes.
Representative Swazinski.
Yes.
Representative Tice.
Aye.
Representative West.
Aye.
Representative Joaquin.
No.
Roll call being requested. The result of the roll call, there are 11 ayes and 5 nays. The motion prevails. House File 4211 is re-referred to the General Register. Thank you for your time, Representative Fabian, and testifiers. Our next bill is Representative Looning. You have the next two bills. House File 3153, I will bring that before the committee to be re-referred to the committee, to the General Register. House File 3153 to be re-referred to the General Register. Representative Looning, welcome, and if you'll background the bill and set it up for the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, members, for hearing the bill. House File 3153 has to do with recycling grants, and one of the benefits of this is it will prevent people from throwing their garbage out when they're riding four-wheelers through state parks.
As you can tell, we are paying very close attention.
Too soon?
Mr. Chair, I see Mr. Nelson. He's lucky he's not in front of transportation. Representative Torkelson would have tabled his bill right there because he's funny.
Well, are you moving the table right now?
Representative Nelson, are you moving the table right now?
I'm sorry. So what House File 3153 does, members, is expands recycling grant availability to tribal entities, to private sectors, and to nonprofits to help meet our aggressive recycling goals that we have in the Scott County area. And for the sake of time, I'm going to go ahead and acquiesce to my testifier.
Well, good use of your time, Representative Looning. Good morning, sir, and welcome to the committee. We'll identify who you are and state who you're with. We greatly appreciate that and proceed with your testimony.
Morning, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Paul Nelson. I'm the Environmental Services Program Manager for Scott County. And just for a point of clarification, all we're asking for here is a change in language of who can match the state grant that's provided to the seven-county area for providing these grants for recycling. Right now, the language is rather odd. I don't see this in any other kind of grants programs where it's exclusively to one local unit of government as being able to provide that match. For us in Scott County, that's putting some significant constraints on things because we're trying to move forward to meet this new mandate for 75% recycling. but I also have other places within the solid waste management system that I need to spend county dollars. And, for example, our household hazardous waste facility is increasing in costs. I've had triple the cost to dispose of the toxic stuff that we received there over the last few years. That's money that I don't have available to match this grant. But I do have lots of partners that are willing to put up some of their own resources, businesses, the tribal community, the cities themselves, and that can serve as the match. My other alternative is to go to the county board and ask to increase either fees or taxes on county residents. But I have willing partners who are willing to provide part of this match. That's really the change that we're asking. It doesn't change in this language what the grant is available for. That's so, it, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much for being with us in your testimony today. If you could do this again, just repeat your name. Well, I don't think we caught that.
Paul Nelson.
Conventional calling them both Paul and Nelson. S-O-N or S-E-N. We just want for the record. Okay, very good. Very good. Members, questions of Mr. Nelson. Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Nelson, I'm glad that you mentioned the 75% recycling goal that counties have to face, because I know it can be a struggle. I'm Representative Lunan, I'm really glad you brought this bill forward to give him another tool in the toolbox to reach that recycling goal. Just as a reminder, yesterday we took one of those tools out of the toolbox by passing Representative Christensen's bill. So, you know, please vote for this one so they have more tools in their toolbox.
Other member questions at this time? Seeing none, is there anyone else in the public or anyone here who would like to testify on the matter before the committee? House File 3153. House File 3153. Seeing none and hearing none, other member questions? Seeing none and hearing none, Representative Lunan, we will give you the final word.
We appreciate your support.
I renew my motion that House File 3153 be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. You also have the next bill up, Representative Lunan, House File 3210.
Thank you,
and
Mr.
I will move that before the committee, and that will also be re-referred to the General Register. If you would go ahead with your bill setup, Representative.
Members, House File 3210, what it does is right now, metro counties are not allowed to develop storm and sanitation sewer systems outside of incorporated areas. The entire rest of the state is. What this does is wants to bring equity in and will solve some of the problems in the developing area, the outer rings of the metro area, so they can be proactive and cost effective in addressing some of those situations. And again, I will turn it over to my testifier.
Good morning. If you'll state your name for the record, and this time I think we're going to get it. And who you represent, sir? Welcome.
Thank
again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Paul Nelson with an O.
Yeah. Mr. Clear, that's the only way to spell Nelson.
Yeah.
Unless you spell it with an E, then it's not the only way to spell it.
Environmental Services Program Manager for Scott County. And once again, thank you for hearing this. I'd like to give just 1 minute of history to kind of lay this out. What's curious to me is why we were excluded in the first place. And if you go back to stormwater management and you think about it, it's a very necessary thing that we need to do in communities to, for health and safety reasons, to keep water from building up on roads and creating unsafe driving conditions, to move it through communities in a safe manner, and now also to provide some water quality types of things to treat that stormwater before it hits receiving water bodies. Historically, that is more important in areas where there's a lot of density, where there are houses close together, where there are lots of roads, and so forth. And so the authority for stormwater utilities to municipalities makes a lot of sense. There are a couple other entities that were also provided this authority, or one other one, which is watershed districts. Watershed districts are out in the state, but in the metro area, it's mandated to have a watershed management organization. The other type of watershed management organization is a joint powers organization. Historically, most of those joint powers organizations were municipal-based, and the powers of that organization goes back to the powers of those entities that make up that joint powers. And since cities had the authority for stormwater utilities, that joint powers watershed management organization also had that authority. At that time, I think they didn't envision that there would be county-based watershed management organizations. But in the early 2000s, the Board of Water and Soil Resources declared a few of the joint powers organizations in the metro area non-functioning. and then the responsibility for watershed management in those areas fell to the counties, or the counties took it up. It would be Carver Watershed Management Organization, Scott Watershed Management Organization, and Vermilion River Joint Powers Organization. And those three watershed organizations now cover probably a third of the metro area, but we don't have this authority to do stormwater utilities. We've been slowly, I can speak mostly for Scott County, we've been building some stormwater facilities in our unincorporated areas, slowly accumulating things, and I'm seeing it's going to come to the point now that we're going to have difficulties funding the maintenance of those. And you'll see also in the language here, one last thing I wanted to point out is it still retains that we wouldn't be able to do this where it's incorporated. So we wouldn't be doing redundant stormwater utilities with cities, so they preserve their authority.
Mr. Nelson, thank you for your testimony. Any member questions at this time? Seeing none, anyone from the public wanting to testify on the matter before the committee? House File 3210. 3210. Anyone wishing to testify? Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to clarify for Mr. Nelson that we're not usually this silly. I think that this is just a reminder that we all have to have a lot of sympathy for teachers the day before spring break. So thank you for having sympathy and some fun with us the day before spring break.
Well stated, Representative Halverson. Well stated. Seeing no other member questions, seeing no other public input, Representative Lunan, the final singular word.
Mr. Chairman, this provision will directly affect the marketability of the township areas that are being developed, and I appreciate everyone's support.
Very good. I renew my motion on House File 3210 be referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, aye. The motion prevails. Representative Johnson.
Is that EN or OM?
We're about to find out.
The correct way.
Governor Johnson, I will move House File 3338 before the committee to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. Representative Chair Johnson, welcome to the committee. If you'll proceed with your test, your bill setup.
Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll and members. House File 3338. Is an initiative by the Minnesota Sheriff's Association to authorize the use of low-dose x-ray body scanning devices for the purpose of scanning incoming inmates to local jails and for concealed weapons, drugs, communication devices, and other contraband such as weapons that pose a serious risk to the safety of the security of the jail and the inmates. The Minnesota Department of Health regulates x-ray devices used in Minnesota. Current law requires to limit the use of these scanners for medical settings. This bill would authorize use in local and state correctional facilities and authorize rulemaking authority for the Department of Health to regulate these devices in addition to those in the medical facilities. I myself did work as a part-time jailer in my community. These devices would eliminate the number of the invasive searches that have to be done. I talked to Commissioner Roy in the hallway today on the way down here and learned that they are also very much in favor of this, as just last week they had a large contraband of methamphetamine get into the Shakopee Women's Facility, and they had a large issue with a large number of inmates high on methamphetamine this past week. With these devices, that would be a good way to stop a lot of this for the safety of the inmates and the staff. As you know, we've had an incident with some staff issues and again this morning. So, but with that, with me today, Commander Dave Paschal of the Anoka County Sheriff's Office to give the committee additional testimony.
Commander, welcome. Thank you for being with us here today. If you'd identify your name and give us the spelling of your last name so we can get that for the official record as well. And let us know if there are any S's or E's that we should be concerned about in the spelling of your last name. And then identify your agency and proceed with your testimony, sir. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is David Paschal
The last name is Peterson Paul, A-C-H-O-L-L. I represent the Anoka County Sheriff's Office. I'm the commander there, and I oversee jail operations.
Very good, sir. Proceed with your testimony.
I'm simply here to ask for your support on this bill because contraband is a significant issue, not just in our jails, but in our workhouses, correctional facilities, and prisons. When I started working 30-plus years ago in this line of work, we didn't worry too much about contraband. It was a very rare occurrence to try to introduce it into jails, and the attempts weren't very sophisticated. And sadly, that's not the case anymore. We are seeing a sharp increase in the attempt to bring drugs inside our facilities and weapons and communications devices. Those are the three most popular contraband items we're seeing. We're also seeing increased levels of sophistication as to how they bring them in. And we're seeing people willing to go to much greater extent to get them into our facilities. This bill, to use these scanners, which are very similar to what we use at the airport when we go fly somewhere, and they're also some of the ones that are currently used in federal prisons in the state of Minnesota, they simply allow us to pick up one of the most prevalent types of contraband smuggling we're seeing now, and that's where people are smuggling contraband in inside their bodies. We have some of the best policies and people in the nation working in our jails, prisons, and workhouses. There's nothing we can do with our current rules, policies, or training that will allow us to detect that. There is items getting in on a daily basis. I'm very comfortable saying that. In fact, I wish we would have had one of these machines in my jail last week because through a combination of good work by one of my staff members and a little bit of luck, we caught somebody with a fairly significant amount of drugs on them. We went back and checked that person coming into the jail, the person doing the intake on that person. Their techniques were spot on. They did a great job. They did everything we asked of them. There was nothing they did wrong. Those drugs still got past that and got into our jail. We were fortunate to catch it before that person could use it themselves or sell it or give it to someone else or be assaulted because somebody wanted those drugs that they had on them. Or lastly, where they might have taken the drugs and assaulted a staff member or a volunteer and hurt somebody. So we got lucky, and we did a good job on that. But these devices allow us to detect those type of things. It's just a very simple matter of our staff being trained within a narrow scope within their job to use this equipment.
Commander, thank you for your testimony today. Members, questions for the bill author at this time or the testifier? Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a quick question for Mr. Paschal. I can imagine that having to do searches by hand puts it at risk the officers in the prison as well or the jail?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we still do hand searches. The more invasive type searches that might reveal this would require us to go before the courts and get a court order. We would have to have a much higher level of cause. This process is very non-invasive, and it would not put the staff or the individual at risk.
Commander, I think to follow on with what Representative Joachim was saying is that during an intake pat down, when you're looking at an individual could be stabbed with a needle that could be on an individual or other types of drugs that could get on the skin and could be ingested by the person that's doing the pat down. I know that there are protocols for that with gloving and those kinds of things, but I think that's maybe what Representative Joachim was referring to, that this would be safer to the person on the intake and the person in charge of processing that individual as they come into the facility.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is correct. It would help protect our staff, definitely.
Very good. Other member questions at this time? Anyone from the public that would like to testify on House File 3338? Anyone from the public wishing to testify on 3338? Representative Johnson, does not look like we have any other member questions or public testimony, but we'll give you the final word, sir.
I just want to thank the committee for hearing this. It is an important issue for the safety of our staff and also the inmates. And I'll leave it at that.
And with that, I renew my motion that House File 3338 be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. Representative Johnson, you're on your way. Members, before we take off, a couple of quick housekeeping details for you. Obviously, we have next week, we have recess. And I wish all of you a safe and good time away from this, but not too good a time because we are going to start again on Tuesday when we get back with a set of items, and we'll be making that more known as we get going here. I also want to thank you for your time thus far. We were able to get by with only three nights where we went late, and if I look back to the last session, those were the only three nights that we had between the two, and we can do that because of your courteous behavior and your professionalism. I wanted to say that again before we adjourn for today. GOP members, we will have a quick meeting in my office at 11:45, and if everybody's there, it will be quick. So about 6-7 minutes here in my office, GOP members. And with that, we are adjourned.